Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
God, Monday morning. Hola, 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 hola. Again. How are you this morning? Sister Amatala and Brother Fleming, how are you this morning?
Doing good.
Alhamdulillah, doing good, Sister
Cheryl. Yes. Alhamdulillah, my allergies are, oh, my allergies. We over here fighting like Layla Lee and yeah.
I guess the allergies are winning out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I'm giving them a battle, though, like Steph Curry
okay,
did yesterday.
Like the Warriors. You put
I'm
good fight.
Like the Warriors, yeah. Yeah. This
How
game
about
is
that
over here. I'm game seven.
Steph Curry.
Yeah. I'm game Kevon. Seven, Steph Curry.
Ron Green and the guys. They did it.
Gordon's cool. Go 51 points instead of just 50, then, Sister Cheryl. Do your thing.
Yes. Yes. See, we don't have an off brand. We got puffs. We got puffs over here with the good stuff.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Mm. We are over here this morning. We have a wonderful show planned for you, audience. But on top of it, You know, I don't know. I wanted to say something. I don't know about you two, but do you find that this first week after Ramadan, that it's, I always find it difficult to remember to eat, to get back into the swing of things. Do you guys have that issue?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you know,
pause a little bit.
Ramadan definitely puts you in a different frame of mind. And some imams I know, Imam Omar Suleiman down at Yakin in Virginia, Texas, he gave a very good short presentation on, you know, continuing that flow that we get with Ramadan. So I would suggest people take a look at that. That video was really, really good, refreshing. You know, and then we have to be careful. One point he made was for those of us who've been doing Ramadan for many, many years, we have to be careful not to slip into taking it for granted and not really getting the full benefit out of it. And so sometimes when we if we have that kind of feeling, we'll kind of say, oh, well, I'll just stop eating during Ramadan, but after Ramadan, I'm going to pile it on. So it's good that you are finding it difficult. That's a good sign that the flow is still continuing on with you, Sister Cheryl.
Yeah, I'm
trying to do two days
a week fasting anyway, which is what I used to do, but during this Ramadan, I decided to try to commit again. Just doing the regular two-day fast on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So, inshallah, that's my commitment going forward. But we all have our different, you know, levels. So, alhamdulillah for your transition, Sister Cheryl, from eating a little to eating a little bit more.
Yes. Try. So, I have a couple other things I want to put on your mind before we get to our gate. So, we have Berkeley became in the national spotlight, and this dovetails off of last week's meeting where we were talking about environmental issues. And I know we've got some fabulous guests here, so I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I do want to bring to everyone's attention, Berkeley was on the national news for doing a natural gas ban, and especially in new construction. And renovating construction. Because Berkeley did it, lots of other cities followed suit. Richmond, San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland. Well, the court, some construction and gas providers took them to court over. And so even though Berkeley became this pioneer in it became this whole, you know, this national electrification movement, right? Only electric stoves, et cetera. Well, the appellate court ruling in April ruled against the city's ban. So it is pretty much in peril, these similar restrictions on natural gas, and it's challenged this movement towards electrification. That it started back in, like, I think 2019, something like that. So those of us who have been fighting to reduce, like, carbon emissions and pollutants, they are typically strong in black, brown, and impoverished communities are like, oh, wow. This is like, sparked, what do we do? So as it's winding its way through the courts, we have to look at different ways to be more creative in restricting these emissions. And so in Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, Berkeley, Richmond, this restriction on natural gas has to take a different approach. And what's interesting is that it is rooted in a 1975 Energy Policy and Conservation Act that was done in the oil and crisis era. I mean, I was very young at the time, but I wanted to see what you guys thought about that, because that was back in when was I looking at history. Wasn't that like when all the cars were lining up in these long lines trying to get gas?
Yeah, it was during the Jimmy Carter administration when that occurred. Exactly right, same time period. In fact, I remember living in Chicago mm-hmm. then waiting for hours in the morning to get 10 gallons of gasoline, and people got upset. Some people got injured, in fact, trying to cut in front of people. So that was the initiator mm-hmm. of a lot of the consciousness about the impact of, you know, fuel and pollution, et cetera. But you're exactly right, Cheryl. It was a trying moment at that time, you know, very trying. And it requires public outcry.
Yeah.
Sadly, in North Carolina, our state Supreme Court reversed three early decisions in North Carolina because the balance of the court switched 5 Republicans to Democrats. So they reinstituted a voter rights ID, which we had defeated. They also reinstituted redistricting that favors, of course, the Republican Party. And they also said the federal government had no right to interfere and rejoin district lines. So those are three, we thought, solid things that we had won that have now been reversed by the state Supreme Court. Now, our intent, through common cause, is to appeal again to challenge these decisions because no court case came to them. They just ruled to reverse those decisions. So it's always a battle. You know, the court is just one vehicle, but we have to have other alternative strategies to fight for what we know is best for the community.
Right. Go ahead.
No, I would say that brings to my mind, Brother Fleming, how whenever we engage in a political conversation with you, you bring us back to policy and the importance of policy, whether it's an organization or an individual that we're trying to, who comes to us for our vote, to be really keen and focus on what is the policy that is driving this individual to seek office, or the policy that we should support as community people. And we have to have organizations that keep their eyes focused on policy, so when these
yeah.
kinds of shifts occur, we can be alerted in time to develop the strategy and take the organizing actions that are needed to support the policy that the community wants.
I'm glad you said this. So let me say this real quick, because I know we want to get to it, because we have at least one or two who are going to be on in the next few minutes. Let me say this. The restaurant industry, the California Restaurant Association, which is a huge trade group, was one of the first ones to file a lawsuit against Berkeley. Berkeley City Councilwoman Kate Harrison was one of the ones who authored the bill. And because the restaurant industry was really adamant, and a lot of foodies were really adamant that food cooks better over gas, whether it's like flame-seared meats or charred vegetables, but the intensity from a flame under a wok was much better than trying to cook over electric, right? So it wasn't just in, you know, new buildings, right, somebody's home, trying to take away natural gas in restaurants, in commercial kitchens, is where they were like drawing the line. And I'm going to tell you personally, I love this line that they used. I'm not going to tell you where I stand. I just like the way they put it. One of the California chefs said that these gas restrictions, taking paint is like taking paint away from a painter and asking them to create a masterpiece. Now, you know, I'm an environmental scientist. I have my own opinion about, you know, this. Sister Matila, to your point, what does the community want is not sometimes always at the forefront of what certain politicians fight for. It became, and it has become, ordinance that is targeting appliances rather than the outcome. Does that make sense?
Say that one more time.
It is an ordinance that is targeting the appliance rather than the outcome. Because if the outcome is to reduce emissions, if the outcome is to reduce our dependence on energy, why are we feeding into PG&E? That's where I'm having a bit of a conundrum. Because if we're moving to electrification, we're feeding into a giant like PG&E, or we're not feeding into clean energy, so-called clean energy, because I don't believe any of it is clean. There's still some blood being shed for it because it's not like all solar-based. But if we're feeding into a giant like PG&E that is constantly going back and raising rates to pay for the destruction that it has had in our North State and in our tribal communities, so you're moving us all to continue to feed these giants of an industry like PG&E or Con Ed or these kind of companies, what are we actually doing? So what is the end goal? Because we are not cleaning up the environment. So he's like six of one, half a dozen of another. Instead of regulating energy distribution, right? Instead of mandating the regulation of energy distribution, which is what we should be doing, we're focusing on the appliance itself. Go ahead.
Well, the focus on the appliance is because of trying to reduce the emissions, right? I hear you on the focus that needs to be put on those regulatory commissions that closed and public meetings that people may not be attending, and sometimes when you attend, your voice may not be strong enough. Yes, these regulatory bodies need to be watched, and they need to be roped in when they are burdening the consumer to take on more expenses. And yes, they're doing it for construction. I take an example in California. So rates go up. PG&E lost a big lawsuit to settle for the huge fire that happened over on the San Francisco side of the bay. And so they got legal fees and fines that they have to pay for. They also had the expense of the forest fires that we've had the last several years. So they have all of those expenses that they have to try and cover. But also, they have huge salaries for the top of their leadership that they pay for, too, their managers. So we have to rein all of that in, I agree. But I think at the root of all of this is community members have to be educated in the space of environmental justice and environmental policies that affect us to be able to make informed decisions on which way we want to go and how we want to prompt our elected officials to vote for our interests rather than just corporate or regulatory interests. That's the way I see it. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. But what's happening now is we are being asked to pay for all of these things that PG&E has done wrong.
Yes.
And then on the backside of that is, we don't want you to use gas. We want you to only use electric, which is still feeding the pockets of a PG&E or a Con Ed or someone else. And on top of that, we're going to raise your rates to pay for all the damage that PG&E has done. So my point is, why are we continuing to feed this beast? I apologize, sir. I heard you about to speak. Go ahead.
No problem at all. I was just going to say, in 30 seconds, hopefully only, if we really need to follow the policies that are put out by Alex, that's an American Legislative Executive Council, which calls themselves nonprofit, But most of your major corporations who are profit-driven, including the gas companies, et cetera, follow almost a recipe policy from that organization, and they get their legislators on the state level to vote for it, and it filters down to the city level as the ordinances. But that's the heartbeat of most of those very aggressive policies that support corporate entities. And we were successful in getting JCPenney, you know, with a little public outcry to leave that organization. So that's why I'm saying it takes strong, strong public outcry in some cases to make a difference. They were somewhat embarrassed to know that they were part of a group that was really promoting the most conservative agendas, nothing to do with public concern, community concern, environmental concerns, just strictly profit greed based on a very conservative ideology. So that idea of being, keeping the light on them, having a public outcry is very germane, and follow that policy all the way through. And that's where you make your attack. How do we change those policies so we don't have to suffer paying these outrageous prices? In North Carolina, we have Duke Energy, major, major producer of electricity. Same thing, they come up with a rate. They ask for an increase in their rates to cover their expense, et cetera. But we always have someone from Common Cause at those meetings to challenge their increase in those kind of rates. But I know we have a lot of very important people on, so I'm going to hold my comments to 15 seconds instead of 30 seconds. I'm done.
Well, I know how long your 15 seconds are. You have a different watch than me, so I'm gonna be over here clocking. I got a new sound effect over here for you and your 15 seconds. All right.
He must have one.
We have a dynamic
that has a mouse on it or something.
Right? His watch got somebody running with little feet behind it. We have a dynamic show for you today, you guys. But we're excited to have some great guests on today. You want to tell them what our topic is, Sister Matala, and what you got going on today?
Sure. We're going to be talking about political engagement. And what does it look like in the Muslim community? I see that we have Brother Umar Hakeem Day on the line. And I know that he and also Brother Kwesi, both of them have a limited time that they're going to be on the broadcast. So why don't we bring Brother Kwesi into the queue right now. I invited Brother Kwesi on because he's a very dynamic brother, and he's a member of a local community board in Brooklyn, New York. And I thought it would be interesting for our audience to find out how he became civically engaged and politically engaged. And what does a local community board do for their community? So, Brother Kwesi, do we have you on the line?
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum. How are you doing?
Hear me? I'm fine.
Yes.
I'm fine, man. I do have a little more time than I originally had thought, so I'm pretty good for a while.
Okay, that sounds great.
Let me just start.
Can you describe what is a local community board?
Okay. First of all, assalamu alaikum. Allah's name, the Most Blessed Redeemer. But it's always nothing was worship but Allah, and that Muhammad, the prophet, is a slave servant and seal of the prophets, and all of his prophets who have been sent as certain parts of human development who have culminated, crystallized into the last prophet, Muhammad, praise peace upon all of them, for that matter. Okay, so to answer your question, I know you're from New York City originally, I believe, from previous conversations,
yes.
Sister Martella.
Originally,
so
yes.
We have five boroughs here. We have the mayor, who was at this present talking, Mayor Eric Adams, and we have five borough presidents who had more power maybe about 30, 40 years ago than they have now. I've seen more figureheads, if you ask me, but they were a lot more powerful years ago.
Yes.
The borough president deal with, I guess, not only issues within the borough, but they have the right to process and appoint and reappoint community board members. Each district, or each section, I would say, and each borough has a community board that has its own chair and secretary and maybe another employee. And we, somewhat, I would say, would be like the eyes and ears of what goes on in the community. And in some ways, we're like, say, the first line of processing in terms of things going on in the community. For example, the more active, I would say, in terms of impact on going on in the committees would be the Economic Development Committee and the Land Use Committee. Land Use Committee deals primarily with any type of proposal to, say, make, to have building construction, zoning, what have you. The Land Use Committee would listen to the proposal, make a recommendation, send a recommendation to the full board for a vote. But it doesn't necessarily stop there, because from there, it goes to the council. Many times, the community board made a recommendation, and folks are able to get the city council to overrule. We have another committee within Economic Development, which is one of the big ones, unfortunately, the SLA committee, which they look authority. And at least the committee that I'm a member of, those seem to be the biggest. We have actual actionable items. So usually every month, you have people who want to have liquor licenses for the restaurants or their clubs, what have you. And the committee usually votes, unless they see what problems, any problems for the community or any reports from the police, there's no reports from the police, they tend to go through. And it should come as no surprise that I never vote for liquor licenses. But unfortunately, I'm always in the minority. So my side never gets to play. But I do what I can do, and sometimes over the years, I've been a little looked upon pie-eyed for my position. But, Marshall,
how many? You said over the years. How many years have you been a member of the local community board?
Let me just say, I'm a member of Brooklyn Community Board 8, which is where I live, which borders, for those who know New York, know Brooklyn, parts of Crown Heights and Providence Heights.
Okay.
I don't remember. I've been on, I would say, a good maybe 15 or so years.
Oh,
now,
so you.
But so this is the thing now.
Let me back up. You said the community board members are appointed by the mayor.
Okay, no, the borough president.
Borough president. So
no, I've been about 20 years. I've been about 20 years.
So
every
time a borough president comes on, is your position up for reappointment or somebody else can get appointed?
Well,
how does that
work? We serve two terms. Okay, and this is what happens. What happens is this. The borough president has issued the chief of staff to process the applications. What usually happens is that you would get a recommendation from an elected official, a city council, state assembly, or state senate. I'm fortunate to have a recommendation or endorsement from my state senator, who since retired.
Okay.
And for the application, a little bit about myself, a brief bio, and then some references, and then for the not, unless there's problems, you're appointed. The max is 50. The max is 50 for any given term. To have a quorum to vote, assuming you have a full attendance, 26. You have to have one above, you know, the halfway point.
Okay.
I've been involved. I'll... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You've been involved.
I've been involved with education committee, health committee, and land use. Right now, I'm a land use and health. Now, something strange happened about 3 years ago. For whatever reason, the district office, which is, I guess, the arm, the office where the community boards are, the district office, normally you get a reminder from them and also the borough president's office. At the time, it was Eric Adams. For some reason, I never got my letter 3 years ago to remind me to renew. Because of that, I was no longer able to be, I was basically not able to serve another term.
Okay,
I sat out for a while.
Brother Quasi, so you sat out. I want you to hold right at that point because I have a guest who has just come on. And she has limited time, so I want you to stay on the line since you have a little bit more time.
No problem.
And for our audience, we are really blessed to have State Senator Aisha Wahab, who represents the District 10 here in California, and in 2018, she was the first Afghan woman elected to public office as she became a member of the Hayward City Council. She was elected the state senator in 2022, so 4 years after the city council. But she has a whole history of community activism, service on the Alameda County Public Health Commission, who is chair of the Alameda County Human Rights Commission. So she's been active from the community level up to elected office. Senator Wahab, welcome to the program. As-salamu alaykum, peace be unto you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Wow. Well, after the great work of your staff, we're glad that you're here. Is there anything that you would like to share with our audience as far as your journey as a community activist to now an elected official, some of the maybe challenges or speed bumps that you had to overcome that might serve as encouragement for our listening audience?
Oh, for sure. And you know, I like that you say speed bumps because that's exactly what I call it too. You know, life, you know, you always have a path forward, but at the same time, sometimes you're slowed down, sometimes you hit a bump, sometimes you have to stop. But I will just say that as a person who grew up in the foster care system, I've experienced a lot. You know, I had to grow up real fast. I had to really advocate for myself. And as you mentioned, I did a lot of community service just because I really didn't know where I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to help in some ways. And I want all the listeners to know that there's a lot of local things that they can do. They can join their nonprofit boards. They can work at food banks. They can support their parks, their water districts, attend local city council meetings. And for me, housing has always been a huge priority, you know, affordable housing in particular. And in Hayward, we expanded rent control. We expanded affordable housing. We expanded the minimum wage and so much more that really does help people. And I do just want to say, like, yeah, we come off as, like, elected officials, but at the end of the day, we're very much human beings. And being the first Afghan, being a woman of color, being younger than the average elected official – it comes with a lot of, you know, issues like bullying. It comes with a lot of harassment. It comes with a lot of people seeing you as something less than others, right? And I just really want to tell a lot of people that, you know, we have to stick together. We have to see what's really being said. And people build these narratives about you because you're a woman of color, because you want to stand your ground, because you want to be taken seriously. And the goal is to always treat people with respect and still speak up and speak your mind, because you represent people that have never had a voice before. And that's what I hold in my heart. And that's the reason why I try to talk to all community members, whether I agree or disagree with them sometimes, because at the end of the day, it is what impacts the most people and how can we protect the most vulnerable community members.
Now, your District 10 now, thank you for those insightful and inspiring comments. And I hope that we will all take it to heart, because there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said. The 2020 census gives a population of over 1 million people in District 10.
Yep.
Can you share with us that the sense of responsibility for 1 million people, how that forms or shapes your thinking?
Definitely. You know, it is the largest Senate district or most populous Senate district in the state of California. I have more people than any other senator for the most part. And I'm also the only renter in the state Senate, right? And that speaks volumes, right, as to what's going on when we're talking about housing, what goes on around the area. And my district is a relatively affluent area, right? We have people that are living in $2 million homes, people that,
yes,
you know, are driving Porsches and, you know, Mercedes and so forth. And there are people,
yes,
also in my district, in the city of Hayward that I come from, that can't afford their rent, that can't afford their health insurance, that can't afford sending their kids to school, right? And so what I've told everybody in my district, knowing that it has such diversity in it and such a difference in equity, I always tell people the two things I focus on laws is, number one, balancing power, which we're seeing more and more there's an imbalance of power in every industry, right, including housing. And then number two, making sure that we protect our most vulnerable community members, right? And so when people say, what are you going to prioritize? I'm literally prioritizing the most vulnerable community members. It's our seniors. It's our single parents. It's our young students. It's our homeless. It's our people on fixed incomes. And then at the same time, also trying to curb industry issues, whether it's, you know, housing issues when we're talking about affordability, about rents, about the amounts that people are being paid. It's about representation. You know, we have a lot of women in different offices, but we're still not at equity or parity in representation, let alone people of color, right? So I'm very proud of the work we're doing. We're actually carrying a civil rights bill as we speak, SB 403, that will ban discrimination based on caste. And Dr. Cornel West, ACLU, the Me Too International, they all support the bill. And, you know, this has obviously bothered people, but, you know, we're pushing that. And the fact that some people are pushing for my recall means I'm doing something right, right? I am balancing that power that exists in my district.
Okay. Can you give us that bill again so we can make sure we keep it up at the top of mind of people in our audience?
Definitely. It's SB 403, Discrimination on the Basis of Caste.
Okay. Great.
And the next bill that I think is very important is SB 466, which also gives local jurisdictions the ability to adjust rent regulations to kind of help with the housing issue, the homeless issue, and the affordability crisis. So those two are my two big bills that I care about.
Okay. Now, how many people do you think in your district will be affected by these two bills? It doesn't have to, you know, just your estimation, your sense of your constituents that would be affected by these two bills.
Easily thousands and thousands of people. And I will say for SB 403, this is going to be something that the international community watches. And then SB 466, I will say every single renter may be affected if their local jurisdiction adopts some of this new language. So I'm very excited that this has moved through the you know, Senate process, and it's slowly, you know, we're going to all vote on it soon. But it's a lot of hard work. I take the issue of responsibilities and duties very seriously. And it's people like you guys who are listening, who are engaging, that really make a difference, who call in, because we have a lot of work to do for the average person.
Fantastic. Anyone in our audience who may be in your district, or actually, it's not, since these are statewide initiatives, they don't have to be in your district. How can people support you? How can people support these bills? What actions, concrete actions, can they take if they're in District 9 or District 8?
Email your direct senator and tell them that you support these bills, right? Because I'm going to be very honest, there's a lot of people who are opposed to rent control, and we know rent control is needed. We need more and more people to speak out and in support of SB 466. And at the same time, if you support civil rights, you're going to have to support SB 403. It's not going to affect all communities, but it's going to affect certain communities, and we want everyone to have the potential to live out their fullest American dream here in California. So call your senators, email them, let their staff know that you are supportive of these two bills.
Okay.
So, Sister Hoffman, let me see something. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You have a question for it. Okay.
No, I was going to say, when do you expect these bills to come up?
You know, SB 403 and SB 466 in the next couple weeks should be coming up. SB 403 will come up in appropriations, I believe, on May 8th. SB 466 will come up to the entire Senate floor. So if that's direct to the Senate floor, we want every senator to support this bill. This is one of the biggest rent reform bills that we can have. I'm more than happy to provide Cheryl some more information on it so you guys can share it and so forth.
That'll be great.
Okay.
That'll be great.
That'll be great.
Yeah,
go ahead, Cheryl.
That was part of my question. That was part of my question, Asalika Maisha, because, you know, everybody's going to be heading to the Capitol in the next few weeks doing a lot of lobby visits. So I want to make sure I give, BWAPA and ACE, and, you know, we're coming up with ACE in the next few weeks. For the audience, ACE is one of our largest organizations here in California that advocate for housing. So I want to make sure that we get them as much information as possible on 466. But Aisha is being very diplomatic, shall I say, about 403. But she's received death threats over 403. And so whatever we can do as the Muslim community to support 403 across the country. I was in D.C. And Sister Matala, this is the one I was telling you guys about. I was in D.C. last week, and this came up in one of our meetings. And it was amazing how much this has gained a lot of attention, and it's gained attention because the Congressional Sikh Caucus was getting ready to celebrate Baisakhi, which is really on April 14th, but they couldn't do it on the 14th, and it is a holiday in the Sikh community, but you know, Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, we try and have a unified presence, especially in the congressional community, because there's not a lot of us anyway. And so I was invited to the dinner, went to the dinner, and we were talking, Aisha, exactly about this. And they asked me about you, and they asked me about this. And there was as you can imagine, split opinion. And when I told him that this is about civil rights, and we were able to we can't sway everybody, but we were able to do some, especially the women, and the women are the ones that are going to push this through, right?
Yeah.
And it was a great, great conversation. So I think it starts with having the conversation and explaining why this is important in the United States. And I think we made a lot of headway in having this conversation. And so I think that the more of us who have the conversation, explain why it's important, and to make sure that this young woman's signature is protected, because there's no way that because she is fighting for non-discrimination that she should be threatened in this way. And it's past bullying. This is just downright, you know, important to protect her life for fighting for communities. And she's been doing this way before protected office. I think it's unfair to call you a politician, Aisha. I mean, you're an organizer with a senator title.
Yeah, you know, the titles don't mean anything to me. It's just literally a tool to get the work of the people done. And the more I can do that, the happier I am. And I think everyone here has the power to be able to make some change. And like I said, you know, the threats, regardless of the threats, we're pushing this forward. We want to protect people. We want to help people. And we want to protect the most vulnerable. So we will continue doing that. I really do appreciate all of you guys' time and just listening to, you know, my two cents on this issue.
We'll be there in Sacramento. We'll be there pushing. We're coming. There's like five groups coming up there. And I appreciate having these two bills so we know what to add to the list. Brother Flimby?
Definitely. I have one quick question for Senator. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Senator. What can we contribute to your campaign, or where do we send campaign contributions to support you? You mind sharing that with the listening audience and myself?
I'll be honest with you. I have to still update some of this just because we came off of a campaign, but I have a website, aishawahab.com. You guys can definitely learn more, but our links aren't up to date. We want to be as useful. Please reach out wherever you can. You can email me directly as well through that website and fill out a form and just share your thoughts. But we want to help people as much as possible. So you let us know kind of what's on your mind as we kind of move other bills forward too.
It's AISHAWAHAB.
Yeah.
And now,
we have until next Monday is the 8th to get those calls and those emails in to the state senators on SB 403. A little bit more time on 466, but those who are in the area, please be sure to call and email, and we'll try and get through our respective organizations, state senator, support for the legislation.
Thank you, guys.
Assalamualaikum.
Thank you so much. Assalamualaikum.
Let's send a question. Let's send the question, please, real quickly, the senator.
Go ahead, please.
Okay, before, I just wanted to say, be clear, all my comments or questions that reflect Brooklyn Community Board, any community board. They represent my own. I did a quick look at your website, Sister Aisha, I believe. Wahab?
Mm-hmm.
She's still there?
Yes,
go ahead.
Now, we're having a discussion about Muslims in politics, the Muslim engagement. So when I hear Muslim, I would expect and is standard based on the Quran, Sunnah, the prophets, even the Bible. I'm looking at your website, sister. I'm going to read this. Abortion was the only first step of the radical rights agenda. Other essential service rights are next. This is why we will continue to advocate and fight for the right to access contraception, protect the LGBTQIA community, plus community, and California and beyond. Please explain, sister, from a Muslim perspective, why you support this and abortion. From a Muslim perspective, since you're a Muslim in politics, why you support this?
You asked, why do I support this?
Yes. as a Muslim. You claim her as a Muslim running for
office. Okay. Brother,
and these things against Islam.
Let her answer your question. Let her answer your question. Mm-hmm.
So and just for timing's sake, number one, we're non-secular. We have a separation of church and state in this country. I wholeheartedly believe in that. I don't want to take rights away from somebody else based on a group's religious beliefs. I think that is one of the most key and important issues in the United States. If we were subjected to everybody's religion, we would not have a United States. And so I believe in the separation of church and state. I want to give people the rights to make their choice for their families, for their future, regardless of religious beliefs. So you have your religious beliefs, everyone else has theirs. So out of respect for that, I want to continue to make sure that this country runs separation of church and state, and that's the primary focus. So I appreciate the question.
I cannot take a church state position. Just the sister that is ducking the question because you run as a Muslim.
No, that's
Muslim,
not accurate.
Muslim. Oh, you don't?
Brother Quasi, to be respectful of one another, and don't put words into the sister's mouth, okay?
Okay, then.
Thank you.
He gave you her answer, and if you disagree with the answer, you disagree. But we have to be respectful of one another.
I'm respectful. I'm not being respectful to the sister, but I'm making a point, though.
Okay.
Because, see, this is the topic on the show here.
Senator White does have to go.
Thank you. I'm going to head out, but I do appreciate it.
Okay. So she would know, I serve on the National Committee for the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And I've been on that board for a number of years. We just had a convention in Washington, D.C., and we had all 50 states represented, all religious faiths represented, and the concept is to defend the First Amendment and all that applies to that. It's very, very critical to our form of government.
So, and your point being?
Government is based on that First Amendment and the U.S. Bill of Rights that gives you freedom of choice of your religion.
Well, first of all, I'm not questioning one's freedom of choice of religion. See, again, as a rule, when Muslims run for office, they run as a Muslim. Well, we expect to agree a quote-unquote Muslim position. It seems like we're taking this position now that it doesn't matter. I see just run as an individual, not as a Muslim. Run as a person for the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. But the First Amendment, it says, establish a state religion. But it does not mean that it's not infused in your perspective that you bring to the table. We talk about the diversity. So on one hand, it's about diversity in full religion. Religion, you being perspective based on religion. There's differences that they work out amongst each other. But I believe that...
Let's take a quick station break, and then we'll come back to this, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm going to give everybody a chance to respira. How about that? Let's take a quick break. Thank you.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM 360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Because there is no God but the one God. Bye-bye.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
All right. I hope you everyone's had a chance to just in Spanish we call it respirar, have a chance to breathe. And brother Elamine, I know you wanted to say something, but I want to say something very quickly because I know
before
sister,
you do, Cheryl,
Aisha,
Cheryl, before you do, I don't think Kwesi finished the last point he was making. So I think we should he was making, and then you go ahead, Sister
Cheryl. Well, thank you much. Mm-hmm. And again, if I become across a little intense and seeming like I was respecting the state senator, it wasn't my intention at all. So please, if that was the case, I apologize for that. But the point I'm making, and I'm looking again at the preface of the topic of today, is that this is Muslims and civic engagement in a society. And what I have noticed over time is that we have used the excuse of secularism to not even deal with Islamic issues. The brother said he's of the group, separating the church and state. How can that be? I've always heard years ago, Muslims, that when we look at a candidate for office, we should try to find a candidate who most closely represents or reflects the Quran and the Sunnah. But somehow it's gone from that. And we then support Planned Parenthood. If you understand Planned Parenthood's history, you know, it's replete in the express purpose of the decrease of the black populace. It's no accident that the Planned Parenthood offices in the black community. And I'm supposed to somehow, I guess, say nothing because separation of church and state. Separation of church and state never precludes my bringing some religiosity into the political realm. I just can't impose it. But let me say this. Those who would argue against this, recently, we have this bill about the Book of Florida and all these types of books teaching children about sex changes. Representative Jeffries was on television at the House making a case against these bans. He went on to say in the halls of the House of Representatives, "My religion teaches me that we're all God's children." Then he made references to the church he attends in Brooklyn, Cornerstone Baptist Church. I find it strange that we seem to be following the quote-unquote liberal side. You can bring up religion all the time, and no one complains about separating church and state.
Okay.
Something else.
Yes. So, let's just Cheryl, make her point. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Actually, Brother Fleming was talking first. So go ahead, Brother Fleming.
Yes, yes.
We'll only take 30 seconds. I'm going to give you a context, and I respect your opinion. There's two books that I usually refer to. One of the books is On Islam and American Democracy by a man, Washington Muhammad, and he gives us specific areas we should study before we get involved in politics. And I've been elected as the only Muslim as a Society County Commissioner for a number of years. And one of his directions was to go back to the Medina Charter that Prophet Muhammad established in Medina as a model to base our decisions upon. And if you look at those 63 articles in that Medina Charter, one that stands out is religious freedom. That's where the concept of the American Constitution comes from. It doesn't come from the founders. It came from that charter established by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family. So there is a context, a historical context, that these ideas have a genesis in, and a lot of it comes specifically from that first charter for human beings to live together called the Medina Charter. So I would encourage our listening audience, take the time, do your research, find out what was in those articles. There's a direct link between those articles and what we call the Bill of Rights. So it's not just a casual discussion. It's based on actual historical documents. But thank you, brother, for your presentation. And again, I encourage you to look at the book on Islam and American democracy. It's very clear on our responsibility to citizens in the United States and our responsibility to advance this community forward in a humane manner. And I'll end with that because we have other guests I know we want to bring on the program. And I thank you, brother, from New York. I used to live on Martha's Street and Staten Island, so I'm familiar with the New York cultural element there, too. And I worked in New York City back in the day. I was a Wall Street banker, so we have some things in common. All right, bro.
All right.
Okay, so Cheryl. Cheryl?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have your card?
As an elected official, I'm just going to keep it short, but as an elected official who is Muslim, but who is also a woman, who is married, who has children, who is a mother, children, who has had several miscarriages, but who is also, and I'm going to say this on this show, who's also been someone who has gone through rape and sexual assault. I'm, like, very insulted when I hear someone say to me, it's a man, Muslim man, who's going to tell me what his interpretation of what my deen should be. I understand what you read, but I read too. And I understand my relationship with God is my relationship with God. And yes, I am a Muslim woman. Yes, I am an elected official. But I did not run just as a Muslim. I ran as a Muslim, a mom, a wife, a scientist, an environmental scientist. I ran as a person with disabilities. I am a Muslim, but that is not all that I am. I take all of those experiences with me when I make policy decisions. And I think that what you said and how you approached the senator, she told you that she did not run as a Muslim person. She is a Muslim. But she's also a person, a refugee. She's someone who went through the foster care system, someone who saw her father get murdered in front of her, who went through homelessness. There's a whole backstory to how she makes decisions. So not taking that into account is insulting, sir. So I think that before we start judging people or jumping over them, as Muslims, one of the things that we should do, being and having these one-size-fits-all, one of the most beautiful things about this religion of Islam is the ability to make it fit for you. Yes, we have a deed. Yes, we have a Quran. But my relationship with Allah is my relationship. And you cannot put on me what yours is. You don't birth children. I do. You don't have that ability. I do. And so my relationship is different than my husband. And so my husband doesn't come in here and tell me how to have that kind of relationship with God, especially as a mother. And so that I'm saying to you, his relationship with my children is different than my relationship with my children because I birthed them. I bore them. I birthed them. I nursed them. So it is very insulting to say to me, what I should be experiencing as that mother. So yes, yes, am I going to support Planned Parenthood? This is something that you can't come and say to a woman, because that's not your experience and that's not your walk in life. We wonder why we have young people not coming to the masjid or not coming to the mosque. It's because we have such rigid opinions and we're running them away. We should be more talking to them and finding out why and not talking at people. And what was just happening a few minutes ago was talking at someone instead of engaging and having a conversation. And the very basis of this show is engagement and having conversations with people and not at them. And this is what I like to do.
Okay.
I like to have conversations with people. And that
on
is
that
where
note,
I
Sister Thank Cheryl, you. On that note, Sister Cheryl, I'd like to go to our next guest panelist who's been waiting patiently. I apologize to him for keeping him so long on the line, Brother Umar Hakeem Day, who has the experience as a community organizer working. He's done some work with IMPACT, which is a Muslim Public Affairs Council, and other Muslim organizations, bringing the Islamic perspective of the African-American community in making policy decisions. So if we can have Brother Umar to come on the line of 4105, that would be great at this time. And we thank our audience for hanging in there. Go ahead, Brother Umar.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
It's never a dull moment on this radio show.
It's never a dull moment.
But I love it. This is what makes radio. This is what makes radio.
This
is never a dull moment.
We're talking about engagement.
We're definitely engaging one another. Yes, yes, yes.
Just for
etiquette, when I'm in someone else's house, I allow that man or woman to dictate the decorum of how we treat our guests. And I follow very lead, you know what I'm saying, because we want to continue having esteemed guests coming to the show, so I will always follow the etiquette of the host of the show and how I treat their guests while in their home. But, yes, alhamdulillah.
Encourage.
Let me see, where can I start? My name is Umar Hakeem Day. I'm based in Compton, California. I'm the founder for Encourage. Encourage is a 501c3 social enterprise, and it's an advisory that helps purpose-driven organizations and individuals build their capacity. And so I'm an entrepreneur with a social mission. What does that mean? We know that we have a lot of 501c3 organizations, but I consider myself an entrepreneur. Why? Because there's 1,010,000 501c3 nonprofit organizations, but you can operate operate a profit organization as a 501c3. Why did I choose this route? For over 10 years, and in my master's program, I experienced not being funded by certain individuals. And that kind of repressed trying to go after grants and philanthropy, that kind of repressed me from aligning with my natural hustle in me. So Encourage has like three lines of income or strength to support the organization. And this is what I support. So every Muslim is not the same. Every 501c3 is not the same. I prefer to take a different approach to a 501c3, a more modern approach, so I could be relevant to my base and my audience.
Okay, so this is in your structuring of Encourage. Can you share with the audience how consultants to IMPACT you've been able to broaden the focus of the Muslim Public Affairs Council to be more inclusive of Muslim interest, whether in Southern California or throughout the nation.
Okay, so your brother has a lot of hats in what I do, and I love what I do as a community organizer and as a businessman in the Muslim community that's coming out of the Muslim community. Muslim Public Affairs Council, which is a policy organization based in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., is led by Salah Mariotti. And they basically brought me on board to basically handle the diversity, equity, and inclusion of Impact. So how many times have we heard that our Arab or Southeast Asian organizations do not represent the African-American community? Impact decided to take a different approach. They decided to hire me from the grassroots to help them understand and come closer to African-American issues. And from that, we've been able to network within our community, the Muslim community, with the Muslim Journal, with Aisha Mustafa, with the Western Conference Imams, with Imam Abu Qadir. And everybody, please give keep Imam Abu Qadir in your du'as. Our brother needs our prayers. And we've been able, and from that, we've also been able to bridge the gap between our communities. Now, communities. The old argument in the Muslim Ummah is that we're not an Ummah, we are communities. In the physical realm, yes. But in the last speech, in chapter 21, verse 92, Allah strictly tells us that he created us in one brotherhood to cherish him, the Lord. So, you know, we have to get off of, you know, we have to come back to the speech of Allah, and he has created us as one community. And so approaching civic engagement, there are many different views that we have, but if we don't talk to one another, if we don't dialogue, if we don't have assurance one or another, we're going to continue to have separate views. So my goal between now and 2024 is to bring more Muslims into the space of community organizing, civic engagement. And I'm in partnership with LA Voice here in Los Angeles and Pico, California, as well as Faith in Action.
Okay, LA Voice. Can you give to our audience, because we have some people who are not from California, what does LA Voice do?
Okay, so LA Voice is a Los Angeles-based community organizer who has a vision for the county of Los Angeles to make it a better place. We focus on – that's why I appreciate what the senator was talking about. LA Voice is one of the federations in Pico, California, people improving communities through organizing. And we we was in Sacramento on April 20th. Why was we there in Sacramento? Well, LA Voice mobilized about 100 leaders of his base to come up to Sacramento so we could lobby under our campaign called Our Home is Sacred. And what the senator was saying is housing is a right. So this is a theme under the Pico, California, housing is a right. So with her, we also was lobbying for SB 4, SB 225, and SB 567. These bills is for rent control and to create more housing in the state of California. So these three bills is what we were lobbying for. I haven't had a chance to look at SB 406 or 403, but if it's for rent control, if my mother...
I think you said 406.
Oh, 406. My bad. So if my mother did not return to Allah and I did not inherit my home, I would not be a homeowner because the housing prices in California is off the roof. Rent for a one-bedroom apartment is like $2,000. So rent control for our seniors, for our single mothers, for anybody that's single that's working almost like a minimum wage job. Rent control, the point of her conversation, which I'm glad that she chose to support rent control, is very much needed.
Yes, yes. Okay, so that's LA Voice. While we still have some time, I want to direct our attention. I'm looking over a report that was generated by CARE, JPAC, and Power, and it gave the result 2020 election cycle. And they said it was a total of 181 Muslim candidates in 28 states and Washington, D.C., ran for public office in 20. And that was the highest number that their research has reported. A total of 23 Muslims ran for Congress in 14 states. Five made it to the general election, with three winning re-election. First-time candidate Mike Siegel lost a close race to represent the 10th congressional district in Texas. 18 Muslims won municipal seats. 101 were not elected but ran a close race with high voter turnout. So that's a positive, even though they didn't win the race. 80 were successfully elected to office, in comparison to other years where there were only 49 and 57. In 2020, 80 Muslims were successful in being elected to public office. 44% of the American Muslims who ran a campaign in 2020 won their election. That's a really good outcome. Finance plays an important part about that. And Brother Fleming asking the state senator about her campaign was a key question that I hope we all took a note of. And six Muslims ran for, this is in 2020, a judicial seat, meaning in the court system, four of them winning it. So two-thirds won. 31 incumbents were reelected in 2020. 47 Muslims ran for state legislatures in 22 states, winning 23. So almost 50% of those who ran for state legislative positions won their seat. At least six made history. Of those 47, at least six of them made history as the first ever elected to a state office in their state. 19 ran for county positions in eight states, with eight winning, so almost 50% again. And 46 candidates who ran for a seat on a school committee or board of education, 23 successfully won their election. So 50% of the school committees or board of education. So that was 2020. You have a survey that you're pushing right now, Brother Umar. What are we hoping for 2024?
So I want to tie this all in. So since the name Barack Hussein Obama broke the glass ceiling in the political atmosphere, more Muslims have been inspired to run for political office or for local office or federal office. That's how we got our Keith Ellisons, our Rashida Tlaibs, our Ilhan Omars, our man Carson, and a lot of local people. So, and this is why I'm gonna get to your answer. This is why us as Muslims have to support our Muslim elected, because this is why we have to do it, because the lobbying force are trying to the lobbyists and the agendas of others, and because we don't insulate our Muslim elected officials, sometimes we see them as opposition because they don't believe how we believe. But we have to build our constituency and as a voice. So if I run for an office in my city, it's only a small percentage that is a Muslim community that would be in my district. But the majority of my district would be predominantly maybe Christian. So I have to listen to all sides of my community and give them the human security confidence that I will protect their freedom of speech, freedom to want, freedom of expression, and freedom of worship. I have to listen to all these communities and protect that. So the survey that, that's been endorsed by the Muslim Journal and all the mostly CARE and all the other Muslim organizations nationally, going into 2024, the big thing that's happening in 2024 is the presidential election. I don't know what that's going to look like, but back in 2015, I remember all these officials came to our community seeking our endorsement. They were seeking our endorsement. Do we endorse them? This year coming around, we have to be politically conscious of who we lend our support to. We got to make sure that they lean towards our values. So this is why we put out a survey to start triggering and creating awareness for the things that we need to be creating an agenda for going into 2024. The one thing that the Muslim community, we do not have, is an agenda that could collectively represent us all. Like, what are the top 10? What is the top 5 values of the Muslim community? I don't think there's one organization who can answer this. No, do the African American values match the values of the Arab or the Southeast Asian community, or even the Latino Muslim communities, or even the Indonesian communities? We need a summit, and hopefully in here in Los Angeles at the Muslim Public Affairs Council convention, we could have this dialogue and this conversation. And I encourage everyone in your own communities to start having this dialogue. What are our values and how do we want these politicians to represent us? So I think that was like one of the main things that Kwasi was trying to probably get across, but to represent the Muslim values. But we have to remember that the Muslims don't even show up in these spaces. The Muslim is not the main endorser of these politicians. So we have to strategically approach our people and well as support them and insulate them, because we want more, you know, Muslims to be elected.
Okay, hold that thought just for a minute. Let's go to a quick PSA, then we're going to come back to see if Cheryl and Fleming have questions for you or Brother Quasi also.
Yes.
So you can get a PSA going with you.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Martha Nyla Abdullah, Executive Director for CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference. With God's name, the Merciful Benefactor, the Merciful Redeemer. We are openly acknowledging that God is one, that there are absolutely no partners with God, and that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, is a servant and messenger of the one God. Through his example, we are able to live in this time, 450 years beyond the time of enslavement here in the United States of America. Proactively and from the mercy of the Almighty, we stand with the human family that Juneteenth is a reminder of what once was and how we can take a stand and be a contributing factor to the human family for the best of humanity, continuing to strive with the excellence that our foreparents stood with and for, many who lost their lives because they chose not to be subdued and treated inhumanely. Juneteenth, again, is as a soul arising by the mercy of the one God. And now, welcome, dear human family, to Juneteenth 2021.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatula Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadi, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
Okay, back on the air. So, Brother Umar, this survey.
Yeah.
Muslim Journal is one outlet. People have to contact maybe the imam of their community. How do they get a hold of this survey? Is it online?
You can do it a couple of ways. You can get it's not online because I want it to be targeted. I don't want anybody that who's not non-Muslim to take the survey. Okay. But you could contact me through my Instagram. I'm at INKERIJ_encourage. Or you could contact Umar Hakeem Day on Facebook. So hopefully my followers will go up from this, you know what I'm saying, because I know y'all got a big base. And that was a plug. So on Instagram, INKERIJ_encourage, or Umar Hakeem Day on Facebook. You can DM me, and I will definitely share the link with you. And then one thing I want to bring up, too, is someone brought up the Medina Constitution, and that is very poor. Who did that? That's
Brother
a very pluralistic. Yes, that's a very pluralistic constitution because it did not own, it has freedom of practice in this constitution. And it protected the rights of any inhabitant of that lived in Medina. So as our imam instructed us, please research that. And that helped me broaden my political perspective of the landscape in the United States. This survey, right now we got like 170 responses. I'd like to get to 250. So please, and if you DM me, and then if you email Sister Amatala, she could also send you
the link towards it.
Yeah, the link to the survey. And then one of the things I want to highlight in this relationship that I have with Muslim Public Affairs Council, prior to me getting here and knowing Imam Abu Qadir and who introduced me, well, I met Sister Aisha before, but he reintroduced me to her. The Muslim Journal the Muslim Journal highlighted two of Impact's an article called Three Questions, and recently a press conference that Muslim Public Affairs Council with myself did, I think last month, on what happened in Ramadan, what happened to Al-Aqsa, the attack from the Israeli police. So now look, without this connection between our communities, with this collaboration between Muslim Journal and Impact have happened. This is why we have to really engage one another in the best ways. And it's and like you were saying, Sister Masala, for these Muslim candidates to win their election, that's a major win. That's a major win for them to even be running.
Yes.
You know, and this is why we have to support them in these positions, because if we don't, I'm not going to say if we don't, because I don't know what Allah's ultimate plan is, but I just want to play my role in community building and support those individuals who support my values while they're in office. Because to look for fault is a fault. You feel me? So I would, you know, and I really appreciate our sister's commentary. What's the sister's name on the show?
Cheryl Sutter.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheryl Sutter.
Well, what she's saying was it was really important, because a woman experiencing Islam is totally different from that of a uncle or a male experiencing Islam. And most women, you know, I was told that the woman is the first teacher, so I should highlight her experience and with high regards and take and have a lot of empathy for her path as a woman in this world. So definitely, we have a lot of understanding, but we have to dialogue more to get more empathy for one another.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you. Brother Fleming, any questions for Brother Umar? Oh, Umar, we should spell your name for people going on Facebook. U-M-A-R.
Okay. U-M-A-R, Hakim, H-A-K-I-M, Day, D-E-Y. And you'll see me in like a green shirt lighting candles.
Okay.
Umar, you'll see me lighting candles.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Umar.
Sorry,
I had one.
The name is Kwasi. Name is Kwasi.
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 Yeah.
That's the one on Sunday. Kwame, I think it's born on Wednesday. I hope. I should know that.
Yes, sir.
Kwame is born on. Oh boy.
Kwasi. What does Kwasi mean?
He's born on Sunday.
Okay.
What does Kwasi mean?
Born on Sunday.
Born on
Sunday.
Is that what it means?
Sunday child.
Yes, it means born on Sunday.
Born on Sunday. MashaAllah. That's it.
And Kwame is born on Saturday.
Okay.
Kwame is born on Saturday.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for that education.
Fleming is going to ask a question right now.
Well, what I can
okay.
Who was it?
Thank you very much. Let me first congratulate Brother Umar on all the work you're doing in the Bay Area. I've been reading about you for a lot of curiosity and applause. I did want to bring to your attention one agenda that we do have available, the American Coalition for Good Government. You can go to that website,
sir.
And you'll see an agenda that separates or identifies 10 basic values that you can use as a foundation. And we encourage all communities to use that as a space to do your forum discussions and have your politicians come in and ask some questions based on our values as a community. It's a starting point. It's not the best, but it's a starting point. But that is listed there on the website at www.AmericanCoalitionForGoodGovernment.org, and it's available for the public to use, and I encourage you to do so.
I will.
I was just reflecting on the surveys that are out there. I got a call from Atlanta the other day, and the brother who's our outreach coordinator in that area said there are three surveys in the community now. Of course, you may know that ACGG has a national survey. MANA is also doing a survey. sponsor, of course, by, you know, it's in the, and of course the survey that you're doing. So some people, I told the brother, just do all three and don't worry about it. But it's, the more information we get, the better decision we can make based on data. But I want everybody to know that there's no conflict, there's no competition. We work together to get the best information from our community.
Exactly.
So, and with that said, you know, we should just realize the importance of each other. And I'll do this very quickly. I've been in the living room 6 times with my wife, and we have 5 grown kids. One did not make it, but I would never even pretend to advise a mother what to do with a child or not to do with a child. In fact, I'm in some circles of the interfaith community, and I tell these brothers, I say, listen, who is the first face of God that you know as a human being? Who protects you when you can't protect yourself, feeds you when you can't feed yourself? It's your mother. So the first face of God you know is your mother's face. I'll stop there because I don't want to get into more than 30 seconds of conversation. I promise 15 seconds, so I'll end my thoughts on that. Thank you so much again for your contribution.
Brother, yes, yes.
Brother Fleming.
Yes, ma'am.
To get the ACGG survey, they go to www.AmericanCoalitionForGoodGovernment.org.
Yes, ma'am. Well, they can contact me directly also as an option, and that is Fleming, F-L-E-M-I-N-G, 07.FEA@gmail.com, and I can send you the link. Again, that's Fleming, F-L-E-M-I-N-G, 07.FEA@gmail.com. And again, I'll send you a direct link to the survey. And we hopefully, inshallah, will have it compiled by October and published very shortly thereafter.
Allahu Akbar.
Now, Brother.
Allow
you. Go ahead, Brother Umar. Do you have a timeline for your survey also?
I don't really have a timeline, but, you know, one thing I would like to say is I want to congratulate every organization that is doing the survey, because as a community organizer, my job is to agitate and or inspire. And I know when we dropped the survey, that motivated all of us to do the same thing, because Naeem Shaw Sr., he would tell me, more hands, lighter the work. You feel
That's
me?
Right.
So I just pray that all these surveys that we're taking will lead us towards this agenda. And Imam Fleming, I do suggest that you probably write an article based on and send it to the Muslim Journal so more people can read about your value, the value. And we got to get this news out. Or even if you could share it with me on Facebook, I would share it with my Muslim audience because I got everybody divided into markets. I would definitely share it, bro.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you, sir. But Sister Editor has published one article already. She'll do another one this week about the survey.
Man.
But I'll definitely send it to you. I'll send it to you. And Sister Muslim Journal.
I love Muslim Journal. I love the Muslim Journal because this is our CNN. You feel me?
Yes,
it is. And if Sister Aisha is listening, hopefully we can have a Muslim summit at the next time to be grateful. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. A Muslim summit on values at the next time to be grateful. That'll be so dope. The young and our and those who came before us on one panel, that'll be right.
Assalamualaikum. Yes,
Make my smile.
Are there any other commenters? Because I wanted to say some, I guess, my closing remarks. In particular, response and things that was said earlier to me, I'll let you respond. Assalamu alaikum. Again, everybody. And I want to thank you, sisters, and brothers, for having me on and being patient with me as I presented my case, the best of my ability, to be as fair as it possibly can be. But I wanted to say a few things here. And I want to first deal with the brother that referenced Imam W. Muhammad's book, Islam and Democracy. I haven't read the book, so I can't comment on it, but I will say this much. There are two things that the late Al-Hajj Malik Omar Wale Shabazz, Malcolm X said, Imam Muhammad took took issue with. One was keep religion in the closet. In essence, he referenced Malcolm's speech about I'm a black nationalist and I'm a Muslim, and I keep them separate. Remember how I felt the religion could cover all this. Number two was the statement that I think he made might have been on March 4, 1964, by any means necessary. You remember, Muhammad was clear that we are the ability through the means that Allah provides, that Allah permits. Though a test of the challenge, I would agree. I made some comments about what I consider to be, should be standards when you are a Muslim in government. The brother mentioned the issue of religious freedom. Not once did I say make any mention of not respecting religious freedom. Or for that matter, ideological freedom. What I did was present a perspective, which I felt was within the confines of al-Islam. Sister said that I'm, in essence, since I'm not, I don't know how my comments about abortion, how we got into the thing about, because I'm not a woman, I can't comment on it. I don't understand this. This is a general issue. Planned Parenthood is real. Planned Parenthood's history is real. I'm not making this up. We're killing our children. There is a physical cost to women when they have, especially have multiple abortions. Now, for the record, I have no issue with abortion when it comes to life of the mother, incest, or rape. Not my opposition at all. True chagrin of those of us who I know who are pro-life. But I feel I have the flexibility there in terms of the abortion issue. What concerns me when I hear some of the commentary of today is that when I run for office, I'm a Muslim, but I don't understand this. You know, I'm not the one to pretend to be this super sheikh, super scholar. I have my challenges and, you know, back and forth as well, as everybody else does. But if we could at least come to an understanding of what the standards are, we go from there. And I wasn't getting that. I was pretty much attacked for, I guess, a perceived attack on the previous guest, and I did apologize if I did come across in such a way. But I think there's a danger. When I hear today that they want to teach children just about pornographic books, like anal sex, and I'm supposed to sit there because, well, I'm a Muslim, but this is the Seventh-day Church and Faith. Tell that to the Muslims of Dearborn, Michigan, took a position against those very books. They took a position. It's on YouTube. Rashida Tlaib, representative, had the goal to try to shut them down. They told her, we'll put you out of office, and she backed off. In the arena of ideas, the competing of ideas, there's no reason why our ideas could not be put in that platform. And what I'm hearing, for the most part, is surrender. That we should not, I don't say force, express these ideas. Quran is very clear for homosexuality. Why do you practice something that has not been practiced before? It's just your mankind. It's an abomination. You killed your daughter. For what sin was she killed? That applies to the womb also. What sin was that child killed? Now, one may say that's my interpretation, and that's fair. So I ask for those who will argue this is my interpretation, what is your interpretation? And how does it differ? How is it better than, quote-unquote, my interpretation? I'm open to that discussion. But I do know that going forward, when I'm hearing people testify before Congress, can't identify what a woman is, this is a bad impact on our children. Bad impact. And believe me.
Brother Kwesi?
Yes.
Our time is limited.
Okay.
I appreciate your points that you've made.
I think if you go back and you listen to the advice that Brother Fleming gave in terms of Islam and Democracy by Imam W.D. Muhammad, as well as the Medina Charter, that might help to see that he was offering a reasonable and a logical approach to how to deal with politics. And we are a minority in this society, and we come under the laws of Allah, first of all, in the Quran, and it's up to us as believers to see where there is a compatibility and where there is a clear conflict between what Allah has directed us and what the life example of the Prophet has given us with what we might see in the society. I'm sure all of my co-hosts and guests and the state senator was not endorsing a book with anal sex in it. That, you know, you brought in something that was extraneous. I haven't seen her website, but I'm pretty sure that that wasn't on her website. The point
I
that
never,
I'm making
I never, is that, I never said that. I never suggested that.
But you just said that in your example as far as what we as Muslims should be against. When you addressed her as far as, are you a Muslim? Are you a politician? Are you Muslim? Do you hold up to Muslim standards and values?
Mm-hmm.
How can you support these things that you have on your website? So I'm just saying, I think you took a leap. I think you took a leap. And I would have to go to the website. But what I'm saying is, even in the issue of abortion, there are different legitimate schools of thought as to when an abortion is permissible and when it is not permissible.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't just use a broad sweep, like you said, you accept certain exceptions. So one point that I think Mr. Cheryl was making earlier is that there is a flexibility in our religion, in the Sharia, and there is support from the Quran and the life of the Prophet for those flexibilities. And we have to be sure that if we see something written and we haven't gotten a full understanding from what the person has written, that we just don't jump to the conclusion that what they've written is against the Quran and the Sunnah, because it may in fact not be. I'm talking specifically about abortion. On the LGBTQI and all the other letters and numbers issue, I'll go to Planned Parenthood first. Abortion is not the only service that Planned Parenthood offers in the community. It offers a complete roster of health services for indigent people in the community. And a lot of Muslim women and other women take advantage of it because they can't get the care from a hospital or in some cases in rural situations. They go to Planned Parenthood centers, not just blatantly just abortion. So we have to be careful with that. If I go into a Planned Parenthood center, I don't have to go in there for an abortion. I could go in there just to get a general health checkup. I can go in there to get a referral to an eye doctor. So we have to be very careful about just a broad brush on how we label organizations and the services that they offer. For an example, you said that on your local community board that the current subcommittee you deals with alcohol, the alcohol board, and who gets an alcohol license. There's some Muslims who might condemn you for that. There's some Muslims who don't even want you to go into a restaurant where there is a bar. And you may just be going in there to pick up your lunch or to have dinner. So I think that what everyone is trying to caution you on is to not be judgmental
and labeling situations without looking at the full scope of the situation. And I think that it was a good exchange. I appreciate your apology to the state senator. And I'm sure that she can take it because she's gotten much worse, I'm sure, from other folks. I think it is important for us to support the people. I can support a Muslim politician that I don't agree 100% with all of their positions, more so than maybe I can support someone like a specific crazy U.S. congressperson that we have in the Congress right now that might be a Sunday go-to-meeting Christian, you know, and maybe I agree with them on abortion or I agree with them on what's taught to the children in the school, but there might be other things I don't agree with them that would cause me not to support them. So it's a very nuanced issue that we're dealing with when it comes to political and civic engagement. And people have to, you know, you got to put it on the scale. You got to balance it out to see, you know, who you can support and who you can't support. And we have to be careful not to just criticize and dump on ourselves all the time, but lower the wing of kindness. Lower the wing of kindness to one another. We're going to have more conversations like this. So everybody hold your seatbelt. You know, in the future we'll have more conversations with family, and we have to have these conversations to work these things out. That's how we progress.
No, I think that's good. Alhamdulillah. And Sister Mata, I wanted to say, and Brother Umar, it's correct. And I think it's also and you're going to find it's going to be generational. So you're going to have, I'm Gen X, and I'm going to tell you, and I have children who are, you know, Gen Z, and it's going to be generational. We're going to look at things different. We're going to have different perspectives. We're going to look at things differently. And condemnation is hard. Senator Wahab is a millennial as well. But we look at things differently. And it doesn't mean that we're any more or less of a Muslim. And I think that that's what is bothersome. We have enough people fighting us when we're trying to get into these positions, right? And so I think Brother Umar said it really well about how hard it is to get and stay in these positions in elected office. And it is walking a very nuanced, tight line, because we are not just representing the Muslim community. You may see it that way because, especially for me as a hijabi Muslima, this is what people see. But that is not the only people in the community. That's not the only constituency. And I wouldn't be in office very long, just to let you know. You know, I'm in my second term here, my third term as the commissioner. If those are the only people that I listen to in the community. We only represent a small part of the community. And when you get elected, it becomes non-secular. It is non-secular in the first place, but it is also nonpartisan, and it is, you know, I am Muslim, and I'm Muslim through and through. I am a woman, and I'm unabashed about it. I don't mind during Ramadan telling them, as the chair of the committee, we're going to take a break because I need to break my fast, and they know it. There's some decisions that we make, and there's some stances that we make that has nothing to do with that. Now, I make them as Cheryl. My decisions may be made as Cheryl, as a Muslim. But the decisions that I make for the community have to be made for the betterment of the community. And those are the times when we need the community, the Muslim Ummah, to stand behind us more than anything, because that's when we need the most understanding. The easy decisions are the ones where you agree with me. Those are the easy decisions when Senator Wahab, when you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good decision. The hard ones are the ones where you're like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. That's when she needs your support more than anything. Not that coming down, because we fought hard. That was one of the hardest races in California to get her elected to that position. And then it's the first Muslim woman to get in, at the first Muslim period, and one of the only ones in the whole country in that position, in the fourth largest economy in the world. So no, we can't be disrespectful about it. There's other ways that we can address issues we may not agree with. So I think it's just really important that we find ways to work with one another, especially in these positions of influence and in power that we don't often have access to. Thank you.
Sister Cheryl, could I take 15 seconds?
Yes.
You can have 30, Simon.
Well, listen, I'm going to quote something very quickly. It's called the Seven Principles of the Medina Government. Number one, security of life, property, honor, and privacy. Number two, right to protect against inequity and injustice. Three, freedom of faith and conscience. Four, protection from slandering of one's religion. Five, right of equal treatment. Six, freedom of association. And finally, seven, the right to insist upon goodness and to prohibit civil disobedience. Now, those seven principles was what guided the first government in Medina. You can read more about that in the Glorious Caliphate of Sfari. They call it the Golden Years of Al-Islam. And it sort of, you know, gives you the backstory behind each one of them, each one supported by Quranic literature, et cetera. But it sort of gives us an idea, a framework. When you're dealing with government, think about what it was like in 1622 A.D. There were literate people who one step among savages, who were given the right to conduct themselves as what they were, with no imposition on them. There were some strong Jewish communities given the right to practice their Jewish religion, with no imposition on them, as long as they didn't do what? Violate the peace. So the objective, fundamentally, is peaceful coexistence in a pluralistic society. And I didn't mean to come out too harsh, but I'm a student official. I've been an elected official for years in other positions. I serve on a number of different boards. And a fundamental thing we have to have is community-serving leadership. It's part of your DNA. You want to help people, help themselves. The rest of the stuff, let Allah be the judge of that. And we pray that we can please Allah, because that's our final destination. That's my 15 seconds. Thank you very much for listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you.
Okay. We're down to last 90 seconds, sister.
So I want to thank the audience. I'd like to thank our panelists, Brother Umar Hakeem Day, Brother Kwesi Mensah, Brother Fleming Elamine, State Senator Aisha Wahab. Remember those who are in our audience, those who might be in California, be sure to email and call your state senator in support of SB 403 and SB 466. I want to make sure I have that correct. SB 403, which is discrimination, preventing discrimination based on caste system. May 8th, that comes up. And SB 466 for local control over rent. SB 466, we have a little bit more time on that. Thank everyone for joining us. And you can always go to AM 360 later to get a rebroadcast. This is Cheryl.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Have a great week, everyone.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you. We'll see you next week, inshallah.
Inshallah.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.